This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests lined up for you. In the first half, we're going to talk to Dr. Christian Smith, the author of The Scientist and the Psychic. And in the second half, we're going to have Reverend Connie Habash, Awakening from Anxiety. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Stem cell transplants may have long-lasting benefits for some people with aggressive cases of multiple sclerosis, a new study suggests. Italian researchers found that among 210 multiple sclerosis patients who received a stem cell transplant with cells from their own blood, two-thirds saw no worsening in their disability 10 years out. That included 71% of patients with relapsing, remitting MS, the most common form of the disease. The sustained level of effectiveness is pretty dramatic, said Bruce Bebo, Executive Vice President of Research Programs for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. At the same time, there are important caveats, said Bebo, who was not involved in the study. The findings were published online January 20th in Neurology. The harmful effects of obesity on the heart can't be undone by exercise, and it's not possible to be fat but healthy, Spanish researchers warn. Study author Alejandro Lucia said exercise does not seem to compensate for the negative effects of excess weight. He is a professor of exercise physiology at European University in Madrid. He said the study findings refute the notion that a physically active lifestyle can completely negate the deleterious effects of overweight and obesity. Lucia and his colleagues analyzed data from nearly 528,000 working adults in Spain. The participants' average age was 42, and close to 7 out of 10 were men. No matter how active they were, however, overweight and obese people had a higher risk of heart disease than those whose weight was normal, according to the study published January 22nd in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology. The first monthly shots to treat adults with HIV were approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Thursday. Dr. John Farley, director of the Office of Infectious Diseases in the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, said currently the standard of care for patients with HIV includes patients taking daily pills to adequately manage their condition. This approval will allow some patients the option of receiving once-monthly injections in lieu of a daily oral treatment regimen. In what may signal a seismic shift in the treatment of methamphetamine addiction, a pair of prescription drugs appear to help patients significantly reduce their stimulant use or quit altogether. The combination therapy involves an injectable medication called extended-release naltrexone and a daily generic pill called bupropion. In prior testing, neither of these meds were effective when taken individually, but between 2017 and 2019, more than 400 adults with moderate to severe methamphetamine use disorder participated in a combination treatment trial, and the results suggest the combination works. The study results were published January 14th in the New England Journal of Medicine.
We have Christian Smith with us today. He's an author as well as a molecular biologist, and his latest book is called The Scientist and the Psychic. So it's nice to have you with us today, Christian.
Thank you for having me, Kathy. It's nice to be here with you.
This is a very interesting concept, this book. It's great that you bring the science to the fascinating life you've had. Can you tell us a little bit about childhood and your perception of what a normal family was like and what went on?
Yeah, I had a very unique childhood. So essentially, the book is about follows the life of my mother, who was Canada's foremost psychic in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. So I grew up witnessing her precisely accurate psychic perceptions, seances, her involvement in criminal investigations, and all sorts of other psychic phenomena, which at the time I thought was, you know, just like every other family, but it wasn't obviously until I hit the schoolyard that I learned that my mom was quite different.
So you thought all moms had ESP.
Exactly, yeah. I didn't realize, you know, when you're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that your mother is different than everyone else until you start comparing stories.
Absolutely. I find it interesting. Your name is Christian.
Yeah.
And now, is that from a Christian background?
No, it isn't. So my father is very spiritual, and my mother is obviously spiritual as well.
Yeah.
But it was just a name that they liked, and my middle name is Aaron, also very biblical, but they told me it was because of Elvis Presley's middle name is Aaron.
Oh, perfect. So you sing, too, on your weekends.
In the shower, yes.
In the shower. That's good. So it was quite young then that you realized, you know, 7, 8, 9, that mom was really had some special gifts there. Did you have a difficult time explaining them to friends or to blend with friends and people in the playgrounds and everywhere else when you had a mother who was so gifted?
Well, they already knew before me at that age because my mom was profiled quite a bit in the news. So she was on in newspaper articles and so forth as, you know, a remarkably accurate psychic. So they knew a little bit more before me, and I sort of crystallized in my mind when she her accuracy when I was behind stage listening to her. I think around 9 years old, listening her in the audience giving readings. Like, there's about 2,000 people in the audience. It was at Massey Hall in Toronto, and she was talking to one woman in particular, and she said, "I'm getting a name." And suddenly she came out with a name, and the woman just yelled, like she said, you know, bang on. And I was behind the curtain, so I tried to claw my way through to see who she was talking to, and it was a complete stranger. So it was that moment that it became very, like, it crystallized, and my mom had this unique gift. And from then on, I became the very proud son collecting newspaper articles for, you know, dozens of years, and that's actually what I used as the backbone for writing the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, your mother's passed since when you're writing of the book, she'd already passed away.
No. My mom is with me. My grandmother passed during the writing of the book.
Okay.
My mom is actually 2 minutes. She's in a long-term care facility now because she has some very advanced bone degeneration issues, but we're closer than ever as a result of the book. We haven't always been, so that's the other, the book also has a very personal theme as well because our relationship was a bit tormented during my teenage years, particularly when she was working on criminal investigations. And she sort of fell into some addiction, and I didn't really know what addiction was back then, and so we ended up parting ways at that point. Yeah. So.
Well, Christian, you must not have got away with anything if she knew exactly what you were doing and what your future held.
You know what? That's exactly what most people think. But as a very mischievous child, I can report that I did get away with a lot, and I know why that is. It's because when you become personally involved, your professional, whatever you do for impression, it sort of goes out the window. I guess it's the same reason why doctors and lawyers and police can't interact
take care of their
professionally
family,
with
right.
their own kids because of that objectivity issue.
Yeah.
So basically her vision became clouded because of that closeness.
Mm-hmm. So did your mom kind of co-write the book or help you along as you were building these chapters?
Yeah, so what I did was my mother and my grandmother and I met almost every weekend on a Sunday morning for 2 years to just talk about the past, and I got my mother's basically report, and then I wouldn't put anything in the book that I couldn't corroborate with someone else, just because I wanted to make sure that it was as accurate as possible. So she, was definitely involved, and she didn't actually read anything until I gave her the final copy. She maybe had like a couple of, like one chapter a year ago, but that completely changed. But she was really happy to read the full book in December.
Wow. I'm interested. So this is a gift, this ESP. Now, you scientifically, did it come through, like, through her side of the family? And, like, has it been in the past, in the history of your family before her?
So there was reports of that, but the thing that made my mom different is that she doesn't want anyone to go see a psychic. The reason she became famous is because she was estimated about 90 to 95% accurate, but she also had a money-back guarantee. And so she would use psychometry, which is like taking your ring or your watch, holding on to it, and immediately she would get impressions of your past, present, and the future, and she would always start with your past and your present.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is telling you about, if they don't know you, tells you about your past and present, you know that this psychic is the real deal. And that's why she tape recorded all of her sessions, and she's done over 50,000. So you know she's
wow.
you know, been around the,
right.
the block on readings.
Yes.
So what she believes is everyone is psychic, and she doesn't call ESP as extra. She calls it extended sensory perception. So from the science mind of mine, I wanted to try to get into it. What is it in the brain or the mind that enables these intuitive abilities. And that I did go into that in the book, because that's the part that's fascinating to me, is these abilities. Where do they come from?
Yeah. Okay, Christian, tell us how. Like, tell us where, how. If we've all got a little bit, how do we work on building it?
So my mom has always said meditation was the key for her. So I looked into that. And so when she said that these are extended sensory perceptions, so if you, I dissected that down, so that means an extension of all of the senses. So in a way, I wondered if there were other people that had some sort of remarkable sensory capabilities. And that's where I started investigating potentially how psychic abilities arise.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a woman, for example, who can smell disease before medicine can detect it. It was Parkinson's. She, a remarkable woman from the UK, who had this unique, powerful smelling ability that could smell something that no one else couldn't. And then there was a woman who can see a mile away, details that, you know, that would fit on a postage stamp kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's these all sorts of examples out there of people with these sensory capabilities. So I wondered if this was kind of like a savant syndrome, where my mom is a sensory savant, and that's kind of the term that I was working with in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are other examples of people acquiring these seemingly miraculous abilities through either trauma or through congenital savant syndrome, mm-hmm. and including ESP. So I wanted to look at the science, and people have looked at, for I mentioned before, meditation as one of the avenues, and people have done functional MRI studies on monks, for example, that have meditated, and they can see changes happening in the brain. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's a plasticity issue, so new connections are made, and I think that's the fascinating part. So what I would really like to do, if I had access to the MRI machine,
right.
would be to wheel some of these very well-known psychics in and compare, like, what areas of the brain lights up when they, you know, pick up your watch or tune into the person, as it's called.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. I, as a doctor, can't you line this up?
Well, unfortunately, MRI machines are very expensive, and I bet you know that they're, you know, well
yeah.
used in our country right now. So, so it would take a tremendous amount of funding, but there are labs that are actually doing this work, and I part of the book actually visits one of those in Charlestown in Virginia. So
mm-hmm.
there are some people that have created institutes to study this phenomena in a robust scientific way.
Interesting. So that's down in the States. In Canada, how would we, is there, do you know psychics in Canada that are really doing well and that are the real deal?
There, I've visited a couple, but the problem is nowadays the bar to identifying a true talented psychic is difficult,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of it is remote. They're doing it on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously today, nowadays, it's all remote,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of it is remote, and you can never really be sure what information they have beforehand. So for my mother, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was no internet.
Right.
So there's no Googling, there's no credit reports, there's
right.
none of that.
Yeah.
So that made it a lot easier to sort of interrogate her perceptions. Nowadays, that's a little bit trickier. So I did see a few psychics that I detailed in the book, and there was one, it was just too much information that was too easy to find online,
mm-hmm.
and then a couple others that were just not accurate at all. So I am on the hunt. So if anyone has any recommendations, I would love to meet some more very talented psychics.
Excellent. Christian, we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the psychic experience.